Glad to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to take a look at the business climate in Wisconsin and beyond Wisconsin, across the nation for that matter, and some of the challenges that our businesses face in today's global economy. Tom Murphy, our guest of RSM McGladrey in Minneapolis, Minnesota, he's on with us by phone today. Really pleased to have him along to talk about their nationwide survey that they have done of manufacturing and wholesale distributors across the country. So pleased to have him with us. And certainly if you want to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Tom Murphy, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Larry.
Tell us a little bit first about the survey and your reasons for doing it.
Well, this is the second annual survey on a national basis that we've done, talking with business executives around the country, asking them several questions about what they're thinking, doing, and planning in to grow their businesses in an increasingly competitive marketplace. We ask them questions about cost, profitability, technology, globalization, and many more. There were 947 C-level respondents to the survey. And, you know, the reason we did this is, in particular, is that there isn't a lot of information out there regarding small and mid-sized businesses, and we think it's important to have this information available for all of us so that we can, you know, make some good decisions moving forward.
And I know you've parsed out comments from Wisconsin businesses, and we can talk about those in a bit, but let's sort of talk in general for terms to begin with here, Tom. What did you find in the way of business conditions for most industries?
Well, overall, most industries were reporting results in the end of the first quarter. It was in the April time frame that we did the survey. Their business results were very similar to the results that they reported in 2006. We asked companies if they considered if their business was thriving and growing, holding its own, or declining. And what was interesting is that if we take out four industries that were particularly having difficult times, we found that the other industries were nearly as good or even better in some cases than those four industries. The four industries that were not doing as well were the transportation industry, the building materials industry, both of those which I don't think were a surprise to any of us from a transportation standpoint. There's not as many vehicles cars and light trucks being made in the U.S. as there were the year before, and as far as people looking forward think that the production levels are going down. And in the building materials industry, which is any companies that supply materials to the construction industry, we know what happened in the residential housing market has really slowed. As a result of that, both the industrial equipment sector and the plastic sector were both down also. Mm-hmm. All the rest of the industries were actually the same or even better, such as medical devices, metal fabrication, electronics, food. So it was overall, it's a pretty good report.
Yeah. Except for those few areas, which are big areas.
Oh, definitely. And it does have an impact across the country and even in the Midwest in particular because of our focus or our heavy concentration of transportation equipment being produced here.
And in that, did Wisconsin companies pretty much follow along with the national on this?
Well, actually, you know, the Wisconsin companies actually reported their businesses as being a little bit better than the national averages, and so we thought that was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they reported that 50% of their 50% of the Wisconsin companies reported their businesses as thriving and growing.
What let's talk a little bit about domestic growth versus, say, international growth. And I know you ask questions about that. Why is that sort of key in your mind?
Well, you know, it is very key as we look forward to the future, is that we really are operating in a global economy, and it really doesn't matter what business we're in. But in particular, you know, for the manufacturing and distribution industry, we wanted to ask questions about, you know, what companies were doing to deal with the global economy and, you know, the fierce competition that's out there. And what we found was that, a little bit surprising, it confirmed what we had found in the survey the year before, is that companies are still relying more upon selling existing products and new products into domestic markets than they are selling the same products into international markets. And the difference was somewhere around 15% to 20% of the companies reporting, you know, domestic growth strategies versus international growth strategies. We thought that that was quite interesting because, in particular, the international economy, if we're going to participate in it, we really need to get in the game. We see that, you know, the small and mid-sized companies appear to be adopting some of the cost-saving alternatives that they get by doing business globally as far as sourcing product, buying materials and component parts from overseas. But what we didn't see that we saw in the large companies was they're not taking advantage of the export opportunities that exist by taking their products into new markets internationally.
And again, on the Wisconsin, I think the Wisconsin companies were a little bit higher, if I'm not mistaken, when it came to seeking out those international opportunities.
Yeah, they sure were, and that's good. And what we did find, too, is that, surprisingly, some of the inland companies or companies that are located in the inland states had just as much involvement in the global economy as those companies did on the coastal states. But, you know, as far as companies that were headed, you know, domestic growth strategies or international growth strategies, the Wisconsin companies actually were about 3 to 4% higher in having international activity than the average across the country. So we thought that was a very good positive.
What's the leading barrier to pursuing international growth?
Well, you know, the barriers, there are several of them, and it's the ones that we seem to hear time and time again. But the ones that were the highest rated, there were three in particular that we thought we would highlight as a result of the survey. And the first one was a difficulty in obtaining financing. There was also a concern over the lack of import and export expertise, as well as a concern over the threat of intellectual property theft. And those three items rated rather high, along with some of the others, which were still considered barriers, such as, you know, the ability to get market information, the cultural challenges that you face in foreign countries, as well as language barriers. And also, there is always a concern of finding trustworthy partners on a global basis.
Yeah, and I would expect that's got to be an issue for a small company or even a medium-sized company where they maybe just don't have the resources or the number of people to work with.
And that's true. That seems to be very true. We see that in our clients, as well as the results of the survey pointed that out. But what we've tried to start communicating to companies is that, you know, this game is really competitive, and it's not getting any easier, and we need to make sure that we're taking advantage of every single possible opportunity we can to either minimize our costs or, you know, expand our revenue in order to compete in this marketplace.
Yeah, and I can see that property theft could be an issue for a lot of companies.
Oh, it's a real concern, because what happens is some countries just don't have concern about, you know, copying other people's products. And here we are, entrepreneurs have always led the way with new products and have always, you know, created lots of new products as well as services that we use today. And here they develop those, they put all the investment in it, their intellectual capital is built into it, and they ship it off to a foreign country. And what happens is somebody in that country can duplicate that. And here we are, you know, with another competitor making the same product we are.
Yeah. Taking a look at the business climate in the nation and zeroing in a little bit on Wisconsin as well, as we visit with Tom Murphy. Tom's with RSM McGladrey in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And as we mentioned, they've conducted a survey in 2007 of businesses across the country, large, medium, and small, taking a look at where those companies see themselves now and where they see themselves down the road. If you have some questions for him as we move along here, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments. And let's take a call. Rick in Ashland will give you a chance. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Mueller. My degree is in economics from UW-Madison, so I like to ask the kinds of questions that don't usually get asked. And what it is in Milwaukee, there's quite a bit of bank activity that is really criminal. Bank One has a habit of pilfering people's savings accounts, and because of that, they get into all kinds of trouble. It ruins their financial future, ruins their credit rating, gets them in trouble with the IRS and the local revenue department. And you can't get any Milwaukee County judges or members of the Milwaukee Bar Association to go after Bank One for stealing people's personal savings deposits. What do you advise on that?
Well, that's way off our topic, I believe. But, Tom, any comment?
Yeah, it is a little. I wasn't thinking about that at this point. But I would think that any person who's had difficulty with their personal savings ought to be able to report that to the proper authorities, whether it be the local authorities in where you live or even some state authorities that regulate the banking industry. That's a very heavily regulated industry, and I would think that talking to somebody in the regulatory side at the state level would be a possibility.
Yeah. Tom in Menasha, we'll go to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. Good show. I've got a question. There's so much confusion concerning the immigrant labor situation, and I'm wondering if your guests might be able to shed some light on this. You listen to one side and they say, oh, we need these people that, they're performing things that American workers won't do. And then, of course, you hear the other side and it's the exact opposite. And I'm just wondering if people aren't being taken advantage of here. And, they say, well, if you don't have them, your lettuce is going to cost $3 a head and your chicken is going to be $6 a pound. And, well, for a country with lethal obesity, maybe that might not be a bad answer. But I'm going to listen to what your guest has to say about that and see what light he can shed on it as far as, how much do we really need these people?
That's a great question. And, first off, I'll note that we did not ask specific questions in the survey about immigration. But we did ask lots of questions about the workforce in particular. And this is going to be a little bit surprising to you, and as well as it was to us. And we've been tracking this for the last couple of years, and we confirmed it again this year, is that there is a significant shortage of skilled workers that are available to help us in both the manufacturing and distribution industry. And by that I mean of the companies we surveyed, about one-third of them reported a specific need for people ranging from truck drivers to, engineers, including, CNC machinists, as well as, administrative people and supervisory personnel. What was most interesting this year is that the need for entry-level employees was as strong as the need for engineers. Hmm. And that is what really took us a little bit by surprise. We had heard some earlier reports that there's a difficulty finding, entry-level people in some cases. And I think what this is pointing out is that when we have unemployment levels at a rate of somewhere around 4.5% to 4.7%, we are really getting close to what economists term as full employment. And as a result of that, it's difficult to find the people you need. And I think what is also a little concerning to me is that if we look forward, the demographics are working against us. In the year 2020, there'll be some 55 million Americans that are age 65 or older, and only about 30 million Americans that are age 18 to 24. So there is a significant crunch coming. We're already seeing that crunch in the manufacturing and distribution industry. I think if you look at the shortage of nurses, the shortage of accounting people, there are starting to be shortages that show up in several parts of the economy. Now, there would be, and we could probably find different pockets of areas where, you know, there are people available that can't find the job in the geographic they live in. But overall, it is a very tight labor situation. To complicate it again further, we asked the companies in the survey whether they were going to expand employment in the next 18 months, and 63% of them indicated they were, and only 15% of them indicated they were going to decrease employment. So that complicates the matter. When it comes to the immigration issue, we believe that it really is a complex issue. There's no doubt. I'm not necessarily a proponent of one answer or another, and I'm not sure I know the correct answer. But the way I look at it is we're going to have to do several things in the future. This country was founded on immigrants, and we've managed to figure our way through that in the past. We sure ought to be able to figure our way through it currently, because overall we're going to need immigrants in order to balance our workforce demands. You know, people my age are probably going to have to work a little bit longer, and we're going to have to retrain people in the skill sets they need today. But this is going to be a real serious problem in the future.
Yeah. Good question, Tom. Thank you very much. We'll get to Paul and Nina in just a second, but I want to remind you, our guest today is Tom Murphy of RSM McGladrey in Minneapolis, Minnesota, talking today about the business climate in the nation and in Wisconsin as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, or you could email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Tom Murphy of RSM McGladrey. He works out of the Minneapolis, Minnesota offices. Glad to have him with us to talk about the challenges of competing in today's global economy and the survey RSM McGladrey did of companies, small, medium, and large across the United States, including Wisconsin. And he's got some Wisconsin data that he's been sharing with us as well. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. Paul and Nina, it's your turn next. Hi, Paul. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I currently work in construction, and we're seeing a decline in young people that want to get into the trades nowadays due to either the lack of ambition or they just see what's happening to the older generation, and we're starting to run out of workers here ourselves. I work in commercial construction, and we're relatively busy compared to residential. I think we're holding our own. But my question is, a guy like myself who's starting to get tired, I've been doing it 17 years, and I'm looking to get into sales, construction sales, and you're saying that the economy is down in that department. Is that a bad choice for me to do at this time, or is there something to look into to find a better alternative for myself for the future?
Well, this survey did not necessarily focus on the construction industry itself, although we do have information related to the building materials industry, which are suppliers to the construction industry. One of the things that it definitely shows through is that the impact on the residential market has had a significant impact in the construction industry itself. But on the other hand, if you talk to people who are working on the commercial side or even the industrial side, there still appears to be quite a lot of opportunity for growth in that particular segment. So there is, it's tough to say whether, that industry is going to follow. That would generally follow not necessarily the residential industry as much as the overall economy. So your opportunity for a sales position there would probably be okay. Now, on the other hand, the skill set that you have and have developed for that industry may be applicable to some of the other industries, which appear to be having a reasonably good year-over-year performance. So there could be sales opportunities there. Salespeople were in just about the same level of need across the country as were other workers. So I think that, you know, overall it's probably still a reasonable choice.
Hmm.
Okay, thanks for taking my question.
Sure, thanks a lot for calling. Paul, appreciate your question. And again, 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments. You talk about risk management in your survey, and I'm first maybe have you define risk management for us and then tell us what you found.
It was actually quite interesting in that companies do not appear to be concerned about risk management. And what risk management is about is it's what exposures does your company have from, you know, not only from, say, a financial standpoint, but also whether, you know, you're susceptible to fire, you're susceptible to natural disasters, and, you know, you're susceptible to change in ownership. There's all kinds of different risks in a business. And one of the things we asked in the survey was whether any, you know, companies had implemented three key risk management components, and those would be an audit committee to oversee risk, a risk assessment to prioritize what high-risk areas you had, and an internal audit function to manage the organization's risk. And 54% of the companies indicated that they hadn't done any of those three items.
Mm.
And we also thought that, you know, that was kind of concerning to us. And we even took a look at our data from the Southeast to see if companies in that part of the country were more likely to adopt risk management programs. And they aren't necessarily so. And in lieu of the hurricane season we had a couple of years ago, a lot of companies, the next day, they couldn't come and start up their business because it was no longer there or didn't exist. At the same time, we asked questions about information technology and whether companies had a disaster recovery program, and that is a little more encompassing than just to have your systems running the next day. It also means, do you have an office for people to go to the next day? Do you have a manufacturing plant that people could go to where you could shift product to? And is there a process in place so that when something happens, whether it's a natural disaster or a fire or whatever, that people know where to go the next day? And many companies don't even have a plan like that in place. So we're a little bit concerned about that, and taking a look at that and gradually putting some of those programs in place would help mitigate those risks in the future.
Yeah, and how did Wisconsin look in comparison? Wisconsin, as I recall, wasn't a real high percentage in that risk management area.
No, they weren't. In fact, on average, Wisconsin was actually a little bit less than the overall a national average. So that was a little bit concerning.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's take a look at some other areas as well. And one area, of course, that a lot of people are concerned about, there may be both business owners and people who work for those businesses, is healthcare. And what's going on in the way of healthcare in terms of the businesses?
Yeah, that's a significant problem for both companies and employees, and the survey definitely points it out. We did the survey for 2 years in the Chicago area and 2 years now nationally, and for the last 4 years, healthcare costs have been the number one issue that companies are facing. And what also happens, and this is kind of unfortunate, because as these costs go up, the companies can't continue to absorb the costs on their own all the time, so as a result, they are more likely to pass those costs on to the employees. And the survey pointed that out. And it also, we asked the question of what were the projections for the upcoming year, and once again, companies of just about any size reported somewhere around the neighborhood of a 10% increase on average again that they're looking at for next year. And this, this is quite concerning. And also what happens is the companies we're focused on, which are the mid-sized companies, are more likely to have a higher increase in their health care costs than the larger companies are, because the larger companies have an ability to spread those costs on average over more employees, and they may have more resources available to help implement some of the cost savings techniques that were pointed out in the survey. And those techniques in particular were offering wellness programs, which is a little bit more of a long-term investment than short-term. Utilizing disease management programs. There were also a fair number of companies that are selecting to become self-insured instead of fully insured in an effort to lower their costs. And also there's a technique of auditing your third-party administrator. If you're self-insured, you generally have a TPA, which administers your plan and pays the bills for you. And auditing those particular companies to see how they're in compliance with the contracts you've negotiated with them turns out to be sometimes a savings as high as, on average, 15% that we're finding in those audits.
Wow. And you mentioned a wellness program. What's a wellness program?
Well, really what a wellness program is you know, lifestyle issues. And for instance, you know, exercising on a regular basis, not smoking, reducing your alcohol consumption, all things that have a negative impact on your overall health. And a healthier workforce generally costs a company less to, you know, provide the health care coverage for. All right. About two-thirds of all medical costs are related to, you know, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and many things that are directly proportional to weight or directly related to the people's weight. So, you know, being healthy is definitely a positive, not only for you as an individual, but in your medical costs, too.
Yeah. And for the businesses, because, you know, there's less downtime and...
Right. You have to replace those people when they're not at work.
Yeah. Well, how did Wisconsin companies come out when it came to health care?
Well, they actually... were a little bit higher as far as the number of companies that were offering wellness programs. 50% of the Wisconsin companies reported that, and about 37% was the national average, whereas about 31% were offering disease management programs where you manage the high-cost cases, and that was versus 14% on a national average. So Wisconsin overall was doing a little bit better than the average.
Let's talk about cost savings opportunities in terms of maybe tax planning or government programs. I know you asked questions about those as well.
Yeah, one of the opportunities companies have to reduce their costs, actually it's more directly related to improve their cash flow, is to make sure they're utilizing all the tax opportunities that are available to them. And we asked about several different programs, but of particular interest to the manufacturing and distribution sectors are what's called the R&D tax credit, which is a credit you receive on your research and development expenditures that you've spent. And what's a little bit misunderstood about this credit is it applies to changes you've made in your manufacturing processes, as well as new products you're introducing. And the survey found that about 57-58% of the companies overall were reporting utilization of R&D tax credits. The other one that is very applicable here is what's called the domestic manufacturer's deduction, which is a relatively new credit that came out in 2005. And that applies to companies that have manufacturing activities, and it's a little wider range than the traditional understanding of manufacturing and what it is. And so it applies to, you know, other companies, distribution companies, as well as construction companies also. And the utilization of that credit was only 40%, and we would have thought that that would have been a little bit higher than that, having been the second year that it was in place. And that credit also increases for 2007 and 2008, and then increases again in 2009 and beyond. And it's a real opportunity that if a company is not utilizing the DMD, domestic manufacturer's deduction, they should be, as well as utilizing R&D tax credits for new products and new processes they've put in place.
Oh, interesting. Let's talk a little bit about retaining employees and maybe a little bit about both nationally and at the Wisconsin levels. What are companies doing to try and, as you say, you know, there's a, in a way, there's a shortage of workers out there.
And it's going to be key to companies' success is being able to have the workforce. You know, it was interesting. We had some survey respondents report that their limitation to growth was the ability to find workers. And these retention programs are going to be very, very key in the future. And the one that was the highest utilized program across the country was permitting flex time. And we thought that was very interesting because more and more companies are doing that. And in Wisconsin, they were even 60-plus percent of the companies are permitting flex time as one of the methods of retaining people. They also reported supplementing benefits, having cash bonuses, as well as long-term incentives were other programs in place for retention. And another one I like to highlight, too, is 38% of the Wisconsin companies reported that they're reimbursing for education expenses, which is, you know, tied right into this whole skill shortage. And if you can, you know, have your employer help you improve your skills and by getting additional education, that's a real positive for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And child care, as I noted, not many respondents.
You know, and we were very surprised by that because we thought there would be more opportunities for that because that really is one of the challenges that employees face is trying to figure out how to get good, adequate child care for their children. And we would have thought that maybe companies would have reported a higher utilization of that, but it was very low. It was down in the, you know, less than 5% of the companies were offering that. And we, you know, obviously would think that that would be a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it costs companies money, too. But, you know, people need to be comfortable that their children are being well cared for and that they'll be a better worker as a result of that.
Sure. Elaine in Appleton, let's go to you. Elaine, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I was wondering if you talked about exit interviews. If these people are wondering why people are leaving, it's not most of the time, it's not the wages or the health care. It could be that they have some very bad, mean supervisors.
Well, that is a definite possibility, and that's a good question, and we did not ask it, but we will definitely ask that in future surveys. So I can't answer, you know, with any data as to, you know, how many companies are using that, but it is a good point. An exit interview is a good way to find out just why people are leaving.
Yep, thank you very much for calling, Elaine. Appreciate your call. The results of the survey, in terms of, you know, just as you looked at it for Wisconsin or for the nation as a whole, Tom, what stuck out in your mind as kind of the most interesting findings?
Well, I do think, although we talked about it earlier, is the most interesting finding in my mind was the fact that small and mid-sized companies are starting to take advantage of the cost savings opportunities they can get by participating in the global economy, but they were not taking advantage of the opportunity to enter new markets by exporting. And we think that that is a significant opportunity that companies need to try and figure out, you know, how to do that. And one of the things we didn't talk about yet or mention was that we took this information to Washington and met with both the Capitol Hill folks as well as some of the administration folks. And in particular, we met with the Department of Commerce, and they confirmed what their thoughts were with the findings in the survey. But they also pointed out, and we are quick to point out, too, that Department of Commerce offers some very significant resources to help small and mid-sized companies understand how to navigate the global economy, and they have an office, a trade promotion, which helps promote, you know, export within, you know, the U.S. or allowing companies, helping them export, as well as the International Trade Administration and other groups within Department of Commerce that you can easily find by going out to their website at www.export.gov. And there's lots of resources there that are more than willing to help companies figure out how to do that. In fact, they even have a service of matching your company up with potential customers in foreign countries.
Oh.
So that's a great service that we like to point out to companies that they should make sure they at least take a look at it. One of the things I like to note is that, you know, your taxes are paying for it. You might as well take advantage of it. From a Wisconsin standpoint, you've also got a very strong Wisconsin Department of Commerce that has some resources available to help you with that too. And you can go to, you know, Wisconsin's website and find some help too.
Yeah, and even the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection has a pretty active international approach as well to helping, you know, businesses in the in those areas, the agricultural area,
right,
to do that work. Bill in Marshfield, hi to you.
Hi. I'm interested in knowing if you've done a study of what the impact is going to be if the Democrats continue to block the president's tax relief program. I think it was of 02.
Well, that's, we didn't ask that question specifically related to specific programs in process besides the ones I mentioned already. But one of the things I think that is important to note is that in the past, and it's been proven several times, that a reduction in tax rates increases government revenues. Now, there's also always the question of balancing the government budget, you know, as far as on the spending side of the equation. But I also like to mention to people that this really is not a partisan issue, and the reason I say that is in modern times, which would be post-World War II, the first president to cut tax rates was President Kennedy, and effectively increased government revenues by doing that. So it isn't necessarily one side or the other. I think the evidence proves that reduced tax rates increase revenues to the government, and I think that that's the point I would like to make.
And Tom, if in conclusion here, if people want to look more at your survey, do you have it online? Or
yeah, we sure do. Is you know, go to our website, which is www.rsmgladry.com, and you should find it under on the home page or else under industries, manufacturing. It's right there.
Tom, thanks a bunch. Appreciate the information, and thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Tom Murphy of RSM McGladrey in Minneapolis, Minnesota, talking about their survey. Go to their website if you want to learn a little bit more at rsmmcgladrey.com and find out some more about what went on. McGladrey, by the way, is McGladrey. Coming up, we're going to be taking a look at cameras and lenses, digital and film, with Brian Carlos of the Camera Company in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.